This is a Pinball News production.
So good afternoon, everyone. A few familiar faces. So those of you that don't know me, Jane just did a great job introducing me. So he said that one of the games I worked on was The Simpsons. So that was the first game that was well underway when I started. And I got to chisel away and work with Ed Cibula on that one. But really, my contribution is probably, you know, just a couple percent to that one. But it was definitely very cool to get started with The Simpsons. Very new. Licensing was relatively new, and it was an exciting time. So when I started, it was I actually started at Data East as an intern. And I'm going to kind of build up to Rocky and Bullwinkle. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I got into pinball. So I started at Data East as an intern, and it was kind of a funny, interesting story behind that as well. So I went to school, University of Kansas, and studied architecture. And at the beginning of my senior year, we had to pick a theme that we were going to do all of our projects around. And I picked games. So everything that I had to do, we had no idea what the projects were going to be, but everything had to be centralized around games. So then one of the projects was a parking garage. And so I was working at an arcade, you know, kind of a part-time job, and so I've got this challenge to design a parking garage, and I designed it like a pinball game. So you can imagine the four corners are, you know, kind of steel chrome legs. The ramps that you have to drive up for parking are, you know, kind of spirally, you know, kind of squirrel around. They, you know, pretty exotic. Lighting in the flooring to kind of tell you where you need to park. Rubber rings around the columns, you know, for like bumpers. You drive through a giant flipper, you know, to get in. The parking offices are inside that flipper. So I brought some of the early sketches. So this is back from, and they're taped up on the wall, kind of back in the middle there. Section views, some of the color renderings, just kind of, you know, my thoughts and ideas, along with some of the finished designs that I had presented. So at the end of that semester, my design critic said, you know, you should really take all those pinball drawings that parking garage you did and send them out to pinball companies and just kind of, you know, see what they say. So I did it. I mean, you know, you're in college. What else are you going to do? So I did it. Sent it off to Williams Valley, Data East, and so Joe Camico called me back. So he was the director of design and engineering at the time. Said, hey, why don't you come to Chicago, hang out? We'll play some pinball, you know, talk. Be cool to meet you. So sure, you know. So I'm going to University of Kansas, living in St. Louis. Go to Chicago. I'm in architecture. It's like, you know, one of the meccas of architecture. Sure, I'll go. So we went, hung out, played pinball, talked for a little bit, and at the end of the time, he was like, you know, why don't you come up for the whole summer? Hang out for the summer, play pinball. I'll have you work on a game. You can, you know, just kind of hang out and have fun. All right. You know, again, why not? You know, they're going to pay me. You know, it's an internship in Chicago. So during that time, so when I first started, it was, I don't know, it seemed like maybe 10 people at Data East. So, of course, you know, Gary, Joe, Shelley, the kind of foundation there. Ed Cibula, Sarah Begnolia. They were, you know, Ed's a legend. Sarah was, you know, his right hand with bills of material and kind of getting everything done. John Lund was a mechanical engineer. Nick Wade did a lot of the electronics and cabling. Ray Merchant was doing the programming. Pete Gustafson, he comes around. He was doing field service with Arnie Artstadt. And that was really kind of the core for engineering and design development there. And so Joe really took me under his wing, you know, spent the summer with him, literally, you know, every day in his office. For a long period of time, I shared the office with him. And so he had an idea of this two-player pinball game, which a lot of people have heard about, and I've seen prototypes over the years here. So Total Recall, that's you know, so we started kind of drafting it out, and then, you know, he was really getting into a lot of licensing at that time. And then Total Recall came about, and it was like, cool, you kind of got Mars, you've got the two different, you know, you got Earth on one side, you got Mars, you know, the two different atmospheres. Kind of started noodling it out, sketching it out. I brought in the original playfield drawings that I was doing, and a lot of the original kind of overlays of ramp sketches and ramp designs. But really the focus of that summer was really engineering that prototype. There were serious intentions to bring it into production. And there was a lot of engineering challenges with everything from the curvature of the glass, you know, so there was a Lexan piece that was unique on how it was going to be cut. How are you going to handle this? We had rollers and wheels on the back, so you could quickly remove the back box, tip it on its end, roll it through doorways, so that was kind of the measurement of the overall width when you stood it on its end. What do you do with, you know, there's common flippers, so on the top side, top deck, left player can control the left one, right player, so you know you can play together. Ball comes back down, and then it knows which side to kick it back down to. So quite a few engineering challenges there, and that was pretty much like my whole summer. And so then at the end of the summer, so architecture is a 5-year program. I had to go back to University of Kansas, finish my degree. That was my plan. And then Joe said, hey, you know, why don't you stick around, you know, and do this, you know, full time. So we worked on it, a deal. I transferred from University of Kansas to the University of Illinois, Chicago. I finished my degree there while I was working at Data East. And so then I started working on, you know, kind of my first real game. So the internship was over. Gary was, I would say, lukewarm at best about this big behemoth of a game to try to manufacture and sell. Probably had just an enormous price tag with it. So he was kind of lukewarm. So that kind of got put on the side. And then I got my first, my first assignment for a project. And at the time, it was Universal Studios Theme Park. That was going to be the license for it. So again, we were drawing out these kind of wild roller coasters and these, you know, kind of theme park gadgets that were going to be on this game. And then that turned into Hook. So the big spiral ramp. So obviously Robin Williams, was hot. Julia Roberts, Dustin Hoffman. I mean, it was going to be a big blockbuster. And, you know, Joe secured the license for that. So that very quickly turned over into Hook. Paul Ferris. It was the first time I got to work with Paul. I'd actually started working with Paul. He did the artwork for Total Recall. So I know there's back glasses around. I remember seeing playfields and cabinet designs. I don't know if anything was ever printed up, actually silkscreened or not. But that was my first experience working with Paul on a game. And then that followed up quickly into Hook. So that was very cool, and that was right. So that was probably, I don't know, 1991, I'm guessing, because I started the internship in 90, started working on the game. 91's probably when it went into production. And at that time, I can remember, I think we did, I don't know, it was probably somewhere between 5 and 6,000 units, which was, you know, phenomenal at that time. Pinball was kind of seeing a resurgence. So it was coming back. And then right after Hook, my next assignment was going to be Rock and Bullwinkle. And I would say, you know, even now, Rock and Bullwinkle is still my favorite game. I gave it to my sister. So at the end of each game, the designer would typically get either a prototype version or one of the games that he worked on. And so my sister at the time had three kids. So I gave her the Rocky and Bullwinkle. She still has it. She lives in Denver. I was back there, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, and we were, it was kind of funny, you know, whenever I go home, either to my mom or my sisters, they all have pinball games, and it's, you know, hey, bring your tools. You know, we need this. You know, this isn't working. You know, why is this happening? So I always spend a couple hours, you know, cleaning things up and getting them back up and running. And it was kind of funny because in the Rocky and Bullwinkle, and in each one of my games, I would shove extra parts. And if for example, on Royal Rumble, we had some plastic ramps, and if anybody has seen Royal Rumble, those the plastic ramps in the front, they just take a beating, you know. Well, we had started out where those were steel, you know. So I had a couple of the stainless steel version of those ramps that, you know, so I'll put those on my game. And same thing on Rocky and Bullwinkle. So any kind of extra parts or prototype parts, I'd throw them in the cabinet and, you know, down below, extra power supplies, soundboards, whatever it might be. So my sister, she had said, you know, it's like the sound's not working. It's making this horrible sound, you know, whenever I turn it on and whenever I try to play it. And that's kind of awkward, you know, to have this. And I turn it on, it's like, sure enough, it's, you know, it's something that I hadn't really ever seen or experienced. Like, wow, so this is going to be new. So I open it up and lift the play field, you know, start to look at it. And it, so it was an extra flipper assembly that I had thrown in there. Well, that had like moved on to the magnet and was, you know, sitting there. So luckily it was an easy fix, but you know, you kind of make it out to be a big deal. So we very quickly got that back up and running. And yeah, the whole weekend we were down there playing Rocky and Bullwinkle. Just brought back a ton of memories with, you know, one of the cool things with Rocky and Bullwinkle was all the different episodes and the different kind of sets of characters that you can, you know, build upon. You know, Dudley Do-Right and Aesop and his son and the, you know, Sherman and Peabody. I mean, you can even see now, you know, kind of modern day, they've spun off a lot of the just individual movies as you know, kind of being standalone. So, you know, Mr. Peabody most recently, or Sherman and Peabody, Mr. Peabody. But there were so many different kind of vignettes that you could pick up on with Boris and Natasha and you know, Rocky, you know, pulling a rabbit out of his hat. I can remember when we secured the license, and I say we, obviously it was Joe. And it's kind of funny thinking back. So in those days, you know, we would have to share a hotel room. And if Gary's here, he'll, you know, clap. You know, he wouldn't spend for both of us to have our own rooms. But so Joe and I are sharing a room, and it was a lot of kind of late night brainstorming then. So, I mean, you know, it allowed a lot of, you know, kind of fostering creativity. And I can remember just that first night after, I think we had dinner with Jay Ward's wife. And we came back and, you know, excited, and we were just kind of rifling through all the little, you know, the notepad that you get next to your bedstand and just rifling off, you know, ideas. And if you look at Rocky and Bullwinkle today, so a few things that had changed from the original concept to what ended up in production. So I wanted to kind of build on the idea from Hook, where you had this 360-degree ramp, you know, this big, giant, sweeping ramp. So I had this idea, take that and then turn it on its end. So it would be a vertical 360. So right in the middle left of the playfield, there's a ramp now. It kind of goes back and around. It makes like a big letter R. You know, if you hold that ramp up, it makes a big R. But originally, that was a 360. It was very cool when you hit it. You know, when you hit that sweet spot, it would just scream through that 360. If you were off a little bit, it would just rattle and come back down, rattle and come back down and die. So more often than not, you didn't hit it right, and it just became very frustrating and, you know, really kind of disappointing. So that was one thing, and I wish I had one of those ramps, because it was that was another one, kind of cool one. I have no idea whatever happened to those, but we did tool it up and we were ready. But it wouldn't have been satisfying to go into production with that.
What material was that made of? Is that butyrate?
So it was a PETG material, vac form, and with it being 360, it was multiple pieces.
Yeah.
So in order to get it to draw out of the tool, two different pieces. It might even have been three different pieces, but you put it together in order to make that full loop. We're closely with John Lund on the engineering of that ramp. So another thing that's kind of different is, you know, on Rocky and Bullwinkle, you've got the big wheel. And kind of the close-up you can see on the brochure that's enlarged over there. But I think it came down to, you know, it was like three reds, three greens, three blues, and you kind of have to, you know, hit the different spot targets in order to light them up, complete the wheel, and then the lights would start spinning, start a bonus round. Well, that wasn't the original intention. That wheel was actually a timer. And across the ramp that went across the top of the pop bumpers, I had a brick of dynamite. So it was three sticks of dynamite that was over the top of there. So the dynamite was connected to the timer, and then you would have to shoot the ramp in order to stop the timer before the dynamite would blow up. That was the dynamite was a vac form as well. But what we found was that big brick of dynamite blocked the view of really the whole top, call it third, of the play field. You just lost a lot of the visibility, both the artwork, the ball, a lot of the action that's up there. And one of the great things with Rocky and Bullwinkle is just the colors. And, you know, it's real vibrant and active with the artwork. So that was another one that, you know, kind of, you know, had to rethink it and decide to pull off the dynamite. And then it's like, okay, now what? You know, you got this big wheel there. So we had to kind of, you know, rethink the layout of what we were going to do with those spot targets and how to get into multi-ball and jackpots and super jackpots. I mean, ultimately, I love it how you can build up those targets without hitting the targets. If, you know, those switches are ever stuck closed or open or chattering, how it builds up to, you know, super jackpots, that wheel when it's lit up and it's spinning. A lot of really cool things came from it. So those were a couple of the things on the playfield that were unique. The back box, one of the very first original ideas that we came up with that first night was the, hey Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. And that made it through, you know, from the original concept from the very first night all the way through production. Now, it didn't go into production in its original incarnation. I think that there were actually more animals to pull out of the hat, and we cut those down. The original mechanism, one of my partners in crime is Norm Wurz. So Norm and I worked on a lot of games together. He was the mechanical engineer, and I think he had just started. It might have been his first project was doing the watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat mechanism. Started out as motors. So much cleaner and much more elegant and going up and down than what we have today with the solenoids. And again, if you see some of those solenoids, they really kind of slam, you know, Bullwinkle's really pulling that rabbit out of his hat pretty aggressively. So much so that you'll see a lot of broken fingers. You know, I see that over time, or I see some of the animals that have cracks in them. But again, a lot of that was due to cost and of having, you know, that motor assembly up there. But still a fun kind of event there. So I think all in all, Rocky and Bullwinkle is probably still my funnest game, the game that I enjoy to play the most. Between Hook, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Maverick, Royal Rumble, Last Action Hero, you know, I still go back to Rocky and Bullwinkle. And I don't know if it's because of just the, you know, I kind of grew up on that cartoon and those characters. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yes?
Does the address on the display at Rocky, does this address still exist?
I'm sorry, so does what still exist?
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry, what was your question again?
There's an address on the display at the end.
Yes.
Does this address still exist in Hollywood?
Yeah. So I should say, I assume it does. It was the studios. It was Jay Ward's studios that was there. Yeah. So I would assume that it does. I don't know for sure, though. But yeah. What other questions? I mean, it's kind of good. And please, you know, feel free, interrupt me. Yeah.
You have your answer, and you covered it already, but itself, how was it arrived
upon? So I didn't really cover it. It was Joe and I were in L.A., and I don't know, it was probably 3 or 4 times a year, Joe would make a trip out to L.A. and do kind of license reviews. And he would have a whole host from Fox to, you know, you name it, Amblin, all the different movie studios, and he would go through and look at the timing, kind of the possibilities of kind of how big of a movie it was going to be. Or with Rocky and Bullwinkle, it's kind of what we call an evergreen license. And with it being a cartoon, you kind of had these balance of, you know, Lethal Weapon kind of action, you know, real life themes and licenses, and then you have like the cartoon licenses. So it was kind of a balance there. We had Simpsons, the cartoon, you know, artwork and game, and then a few real life games in between there. So it was just kind of good timing. I think that it was, I don't know if it was just kind of happenstance that Joe was looking at Rocky and Bullwinkle. It wasn't something that I remember that we went out and targeted to say, we're going to go get Rocky and Bullwinkle. But we had the pleasure of meeting his wife and then getting the license from there.
Was June Frey involved in it, or any of the other voices?
So none of the other voices from the actual animations were involved. I want to say that was all Fred. So Fred's here often. I think Fred Young, if I remember right. Yeah.
Hey, the one thing I want to say real quick is, it for those who go to the banquet Saturday, and hopefully you might want to make it, Tim. But I've got a slide presentation of previous expos, and one of them is you as a youngster, and I have a actual picture of the Total Recall.
Very cool.
So you might get a kick out of seeing it. Plus, there's some other thing with an amoeba or something. I don't know what that was, underground or whatever it's called. Some sort of.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You'll find out if you show up. Any other questions? Gary.
Gary.
Hi, Tim. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
I don't know if you remember our first meeting when I was popping into Dane's Rings, I think it was doing when I was in Chicago. And I met you and you were working on Total Recall. So probably one of the very few that had the privilege of playing that game with you.
Yes.
And I noticed when I was at the Stern factory, they actually still got the prototype there at the back of the factory.
Very cool.
And I'm just thinking that with them moving premises, maybe you could sneak in there and take that game home with you and finish it off.
Finish it off, yeah, that'd be great.
That would be good. I'm up for that, you know, if you can.
So, Gary, you're behind the move to get him out of retirement, right?
Yeah. If it'll fit in the back of my Volvo, I'll take it home with me. in the boot, as you would say, of my Volvo.
Okay.
Might be hanging out. Yeah, might be hanging out the back.
Any last second questions? All right, Tim, thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you, everyone.